Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mundo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mundo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mundo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mundo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mundo!
He was lying. He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourselves down.
You are tuned in to yet another episode of the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Before I do anything else, I need to wish an apology to Mr. Billy Shears of the White Rose Society Message Forum, and he was upset because I implied that he didn't know that the Don't Dream It's Over song that I played on the show last week was a remake. And if I had read his entire email, I would have realized this. So I'm sorry I screwed that up. Of course, when you do the whole show by yourself, man, plus the blog, plus having to work 40 hours a week, these things are going to happen. So I'm sorry that I screwed that up. Once again, the URL for the site is
cupofjoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address to write to me is
joevcsl.net.
And of course, the archives are always available at the White Rose Society. That's www.whiterosesociety.org. And my thanks to my good friend Ben Birch for all his help in keeping those for everyone to listen to. Now, the last show was the premiere show for the people at Radio Power. That's radiopower.org, and they're a progressive internet radio station, and they host several shows, and they just included me in their scheduling, and I'm very grateful for that because they've got a lot of listeners there, a lot of good shows there too, Peter Werby and Tom Harton and Guy James, and of course the great Randy Rhodes. So I'm proud to be on the same group with them. And this show that I'm speaking to you now on is the premiere show on Rant Radio. That's shockingly enough, rantradio.com. And they're also another progressive show. A lot of younger kids on that. And, in fact, I am really the old bastard of that show, of that station, if you can call it that. Station network, I'm really not sure what to call all these things. But I'm glad to be on rantradio.com. I like some of the shows on there, especially Sean Kennedy. I really enjoy listening to him and listening to what the younger crowd have to say. And so I want to welcome all of you who are listening through either Rant Radio or Radio Power, and I encourage you to comment on the blog or to email me so that I know I'm not just bloviating into empty space out here. Now, Radio Power and Rant Radio have stricter scheduling limitations than I'm used to. And, in fact, our Radio Power last week had to cut into the show because of the long musical interviews. They said, and I kind of agree, that music sent out over at 16 KBS, which is their transmission speed, doesn't sound very good, and their listenership goes down. And I can understand that. I certainly don't want to drive any listeners away. But I do want to continue to have the music and some of the other goofy stuff. So this is what I'm going to do. For those of you who are listening on Radio Power or Rant Radio, you will get a music-free version. Well, I'll do some little drops and interludes, but you won't have, like, the full songs. And this will fit into their hour-long time slot, which is what they've got me for. And an hour is a good, decent time for a show. And on my own site at cupofjoe.blogspot.com or cupjoe.com, and I'll talk about that in a second, and, of course, the White Rose Society Archives, for them, you'll get the full show with all the music included, because I know there are people out there who like the music and want to hear more of it. Now, I mentioned about cupjoe.com and compared that to cupofjoe.blogspot.com. And here's the deal. I run the blog. The blog is like really the main site that I want everybody to go to. It's cupofjoe.blogspot.com. Excuse me, a little belch there. Professional radio, ladies and gentlemen. But that's the site that I want everybody to go to, the blog, because that's where I post, and I post as frequently as I possibly can. Now, you can stream the show from the blog also, and of course there's my links and all the other stuff there, and that's cool. Now, there's also cupjoe.com, and you can stream the show from there, and very few people really go to that site, and I don't really advertise it that much because it's really, the site only really exists for me to put the show on. That is my server space, basically, to put the show on. And I only have the most recent show there. And, you know, White Rose Society, they have the archives and stuff like that. And I also send, you know, the version to now to Radio Power and Rant Radio. But I just want to let people know that you can also stream from directly from cupjoe.com. I tried to get cupojoe.com, but that was already taken. Bastards! So I put it on cupjoe.com. That was simply enough. One of these days, when I get a little more settled, a little more situated, and I get a little more time to deal with it, what I'd like to do is just make cupjoe.com the regular site. I'd need somebody to set up like Movable Type or whatever that program is so that I can do a blog from the cupjoe.com and not use blogspot.com anymore. But again, that's in the future, and I'm very happy with Blogspot. It's fairly easy to post, fairly easy to do things with, and I really don't have any problems with it. So I'm just very happy with the way things are right now. If the change goes over in the future, I will let you know, but quite frankly, I'm not in any hurry to make that sort of change. There's still things that I need. There's still things that I want to get for the show, and I'm strapped for cash, as always. And I'm not going to go out there and be a PBS guy, but if you do want to donate something to the site, there's right on the blogs, there's right there. So how much is a cup of Joe worth to you? And mostly, I just need some minor upgrades, computer stuff, things like that. I'd like to get a new motherboard or a new processing chip, things like that. Or even a whole new computer setup. You can get a decent computer setup nowadays for like $400 or $500. And I'm not going to pressure anybody to do it because I hate begging for money. And, you know, I'm doing a little better now than I used to. It's still going to be a ways before I can afford a whole new computer. But, you know, if you've got the urge to donate a couple of dollars here and there, please do. And also to our Rant Radio, and I don't think Rant Radio takes donations. I have to double check on their site. I know Radio Power does, so I also urge you to donate to them if you can afford it. There's so many good people out there that a few bucks here or there can just help out somewhat. And if you have it, if you can afford it, don't use the rent money, don't use the food money, but if you can afford it, just go out there and you know, toss a few dollars their way and my way if you can afford it too, because you know we're all good people and we're all fighting for the cause, and we're not like the Republicans who can just basically hire people to tell lies, and we're trying to refute those lies with our own version of the truth, and we're doing it for free, we're doing it for nothing. And in my case, I'm doing everything by myself, and I bitch about this every week. That's my usual bitch. I do it all by myself, and I'm the only one here. Why does no one love me? But right now I'm just in a position where I'm doing the whole thing. I don't have anybody doing research for me. That's why I screwed up with the whole Billy Shears thing, is because I'm really only skimming through stuff because I don't have time to read a lot of things. Not that I get a lot of emails to begin with, but, you know, I work 40 hours a week, and then I come home and I do the show. And if I get tired, I have to stop. You know, that's it. I can't do the show while I'm falling asleep. Well, you hear, you know, you don't want to hear an hour or so of that, so. Anyway, this is a special show today, and I'm going to jump right into this because I was going to hold it off until later. I actually did this earlier this afternoon, and it's just one of the marvels of technology. It was a very simple thing. I went, you know, a few weeks ago, I bought a little phone attachment thing for the setup here so that I can do phone interviews. And here I am now. I'm able to talk to people, and we're going to have a very special guest in the studio right after the drop, and it's going to be my friend George Lowe, who is the voice of Space Ghosts from Space Ghosts Coast to Coast. So for you listening on White Rose and on my site, you'll get a little music. And for the rest of you, we'll have a little commercial break, and we'll be right back with the Cup of Joe radio show. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. You may not recall that Iraqis are now on their second American proconsul ruler. The first one selected by the Cheney-Rumsfeld shadow government was retired General Jay Garner. But apparently George W. Bush didn't like that Garner made inappropriately dressed forays into the rabble of King George's Iraqi subjects. Sometimes Garner wore a short-sleeved shirt without a tie as he walked into staged photo ops surrounded by a hired squad of mercenaries. So George threw a hissy fit and called Colin Powell at the State Department, where appearances count for everything. The conversation must have gone something like this. Oh, hey, Colin, this Garner guy looks like one of my ranch hands. Get rid of him and find me a guy who looks like he's dressed up for a summer evening cocktail party at the Kennebunkport Country Club. We gotta give the natives over there somebody to look up to. Powell, deeply appreciative of being back in the loop again, surely stepped up to the plate. I know just the guy, L. Paul Bremer. He's a real sharp dresser and will say whatever you tell him to say, even if it's grossly hypocritical and doesn't make any sense. To which George responded, Colin, I knew I could count on you. That's the kind of man I'm looking for. You know, this Garner guy, in addition to being a low-class dresser, actually tells the truth, and that worries me. We have our standards in this administration, and there is absolutely no place for the truth. And Bremer has definitely fulfilled Bush's expectations. In the name of democracy, Bremer has performed like a true Bush cartel lackey and suppressed democracy. By most accounts, Bremer is credited with setting off the fire that lit Fallujah because he closed down a paper that he said was threatening democracy. You know how free speech can undermine democracy, don't you, Paul? That's what makes you George's kind of guy. So, we're closing in on 700 American GIs killed in Iraq, thousands wounded, thousands of Iraqis killed, and perhaps tens of thousands wounded. And that doesn't even include American civilians, including missionaries and mercenaries, who aren't a part of the official Pentagon military body count. But what does that all matter to L. Paul Bremer? I mean, he's a Bush success story. Lie when you need to and lie when you don't need to, just to keep in practice. Dress like you're going to a country club dinner party. Look casually engaged among a squad of mercenary security guards armed with guns the size of howitzers. And consider every Iraqi, except the paid-and-bought Chalabi clan, an enemy of democracy. Well, that's why L. Paul Bremer is our 28th BuzzFlash GOP Hypocrite of the Week. We thought the guy could use a little special honor, with this being the bloodiest month for our GIs in Iraq. You know, it kind of ruins a good round of martinis when you have to sign off on a rush order of extra body bags. Doesn't it, Mr. Bremer? Jeez, the indignity some people have to endure. By the way, what does the L stand for anyway? Perhaps liar? Until next week, just remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
Welcome back to the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, that URL is cupojoe.blogspot.com, cupojoe.blogspot.com, and my email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And, you know, really, you don't have to say anything much, but I'm going to ask everybody who's listening in, if you have the opportunity, either right away or if you want to write it down, but I'd like everybody who is listening to the show now to get on the blog in one way, shape, or form, either, like I said, right now or later on, and make a comment on the open thread for this show. It'll say open thread, show 28. And again, the URL is cupojoe.blogspot.com. Go in there and make a comment. Just say present or I'm here or something like that. And you don't have to leave, like, your full name or anything, but just, like, leave your name and where you're listening from. Like, you know, Sam from California or something like that. So I have an idea of how many people are actually listening to the show. Please, seriously, if you're listening to this, you obviously have a computer, so you can get onto the site. If not now, you can get on a little later on in the day. Now, okay, a little while ago I did get a telephone thingy so I can record people over the phone, not surreptitiously, but for phone interviews, because, you know, I really don't have a lot of space here in the studio. And I do know some people in the entertainment industry, and I'm going to try to get them on the show. And I do have my first one here, and he's actually a kind of a friend of mine, because we've worked together for a few years now. And his name is George Lowe, and all of you will probably know him as the voice of Space Ghost from Cartoon Network's Space Ghost Coast to Coast. So listen to my voice change as we switch over to the telephone. And I say,
welcome to the studio, George Lowe. How are you, George?
Joe, lovely.
Lovely.
And you?
I am just fine, sir.
It's groovy to be here.
Oh, well, first of all, let me congratulate you on the 10th anniversary of Space Ghost Coast to Coast.
Thank you.
They have been running those really goofy ads on Cartoon Network.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thrilled they broke those out of mothballs again. Because, you know, it wasn't bad enough being in 90-degree heat and three layers of spandex on a Shetland pony. He was a cute little thing. I felt bad. The horse got the short end of that stick, having Fat Boy trying to sit down on him. But, you know, I couldn't put any weight on him. It would have broken the horse.
Yeah, I noticed you were just kind of like standing over it. It was
yeah.
a very, very small horse. Just, you know.
He had thyroid trouble.
How did you get involved with the Space Ghost thing? Were you already working for Cartoon Network?
No, actually, was down the hall doing promo stuff for TBS and TNT. That's back before the building became like Fort Knox, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If the receptionist and you were pals, you were in. And there used to be this sweet little lady, Jeanette, who would work at the main reception desk at the mansion off of Techwood. And I'd go in every day, you know, shopping for work, whatever I could get, you know, and basically just, I was like the fuller voice guy. I was going desk to desk, door to door, and picking up some stuff, actually. TBS and TNT were using me, and Turner Home Entertainment came out of that, and eventually enough good word got back to Cartoon about my ability to be versatile that they finally said, well, yeah, let's hear this guy. We've read everybody else so far. And it was one of those things where, you know, you got a good feeling about it while you were reading it. That usually means nothing in our business, but you know, I just had a feeling that it had gone pretty well, the audition for Space Ghost, and it must have.
Well, it's as difficult as it must be to be a voice actor to begin with, I would imagine that it's even more difficult just to get jobs because there's so many other people out there trying to do
it's
the same
crazy.
Thing.
It's crazy because there are a zillion people out there. And unfortunately, it seems like from time to time, you know, they just move on to other towns.
Right. Now, so you were actually in the building, and that's where you kind of heard about the whole Space Ghost thing. How many other people were auditioning for that?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. They had even, you know, Gary Owens had done an audition, and
well, didn't he do with even they make a little pilot or something originally
yeah, oh, yeah.
with him?
Yeah, and I think they had said before on the record that it just didn't feel right. It just didn't have the vibe they were looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, I'm so unstructured and, you know, off the hook to begin with, it seemed to work, you know, because I would just start talking, just like you and I are, about, well, wait a minute, what am I supposed to sound like, an idiot on this line, or do I get stupid on the next one, or am I supposed to sound like genius boy here, you know, and people just started using the outtakes and mining for jokes and all of the little asides that we would have, the various producers and I, during a session. And they managed to get some mileage out of that, too. The outtakes became a pretty significant part of.
Well, I should mention at this point that Gary Owens was the original voice of the Space Ghost cartoon back in the 60s, which, by the way, if you've ever seen it, is not the greatest cartoon in the world.
Oh, I liked the old ones.
You like the old ones?
Yeah, I grew up with those.
I kind of look at those and I think, oh, my God, how could I have watched those when I was younger?
No, I enjoyed them. I got up every Saturday and would sit in front of the TV. My friends would come over and we'd watch, you know, the original Space Ghost, which was part of what was so cool about getting the gig.
Well, they had the Space Ghost, and they had, like, Frankenstein Jr. and The Impossibles and all these really goofy shows. What was it, the one with the cavemen?
I can't remember that one, but I remember Frankenstein Jr., and it broke my heart. I had a box of the bubble bath somebody had actually left for me, Frankenstein Jr. and Space Ghost bubble bath.
Oh, my God.
And it was an original box, and when I was moving, the darn thing fell, and needless to say, you haven't lived until you've had to vacuum up, like, 40-year-old soap. it's an aroma you don't soon forget as it heats up in the bag of your dirt devil. It's a real hearty musk. You know, people were coming in, oh, your house smells so interesting. It's what is that? It's a 40-year-old bubble bath.
God.
Yeah.
We should also mention that you do not do the show by yourself, of course. You have some very good co-stars, Clay Croker, Andy Merrill.
Andy Merrill.
And Clay does the voice for Zorak and Moltar. And he also does the animation.
Right.
The little animation. And Andy Merrill does the voice for Brack. And you are the voice of Brack's father on the new Brack show on Adult Swim.
And Andy is also, golly, who was he? Lokar? I can't remember all. Andy and Clay pop up in a number of different roles.
And they just took all these old villains of Space Ghosts and turned them in. They had I think Lothar is the little insect guy, not like a mantis, but like a little beetle.
Lokar's like a bug.
Yeah, and he's like a high intellectual type.
Exactly.
Now, you mentioned just doing a lot of freelance voice work before, but you have a long career in radio and television. I mean, you mentioned, I think you started as a DJ?
Right.
What station was that?
Ago.
Wow.
In Central Florida, in tiny little Brooksville, the AM station there, that's where I started many, many years ago.
Well, 30 years ago was a very different story for radio, wasn't it?
It was a little easier. I won't say that it was a cakewalk. I mean, you still had to go in and get the job done, but... you know, it's not like now. It's just these days you don't really walk in off the street and get a job in radio.
And it really used to be like that for not for a lot of it, but there used to be a lot of that stuff sort of happening, didn't
it? It was a small enough town, and, you know, a lot of the guys had rather pronounced accents. And some of the guys, of course, had come from big stations and, you know, we're headed towards retirement and just moving to a little town and taking it easy. So there were a couple of guys who were really sharp. Don Smith was a guy I used to work with, and Don had been everywhere. He'd worked in a lot of markets. And then one of the other guys, Ken DeBusk, was a buddy of mine. I haven't heard from Ken in years, but... Ken's dad owned the auto parts store there in town, and he and I got to be pals. We did all this stupid stuff on the radio, fake commercials, and, you know, they didn't have appearances or anything. You basically just went in, read, and went home. That was it. You did your show, and you were done.
And as the nature of radio has changed, of course, now you've got all these big multi-glomerate, I don't know what the word for it is, but like Clear Channel and all these that... You know, a lot of these little local stations are just
Next
automated
Radio,
now.
Next is big. Yeah. Clear Channel. Cox has got, you know, a tremendous amount of stations.
Do you think that's a bad thing, or do you think it's a good thing?
You know, I mean, it's America. If, you know what I'm saying? That's kind of a pat answer, but it's America.
Well, do you worry that there's too many...
If you can buy 20 stations, if you're rich enough to get 20 stations, and... You know, the old law used to be 7, 7, and 7. You could have 7 AM, 7 FM, and 7 TV. Mm-hmm. And then there were market rules. You know, you couldn't own more than three, I guess, in the same market. I don't know. That's going back to college, and I didn't do too well there. But you know, now it's like anybody else. Basically, they you know, they have 6 million phone companies now. It used to be one. And I don't know. My theory is, if you can get rich doing your thing, then why not get rich doing your thing?
Well, I think a lot of people have a problem with the fact that with
Flynn.
So
with, hey, you're having
with Flynn.
Problem with Flynn right now.
Flynn,
clear your throat, Joe, and I will stall for you. Flynn, come on, get it up, baby. Come on, Joe.
This is what happened. This is professional radio here.
Clear it. Clear it, Joe.
It's cleared. It's
bring
cleared.
It up.
The point we usually make for those of us on the left-hand side is the fact that with all the conglomeration that you're not getting a true diversity of message. But I know you don't get too much into politics, so I don't want to talk about that.
I don't think that's the case at all. I mean, a number of talk radio shows are owned by Clear Channel, and you know, you're not finding people in there getting memos about don't talk about this, don't talk about that.
Well, actually, I think
talk radio show.
I think you are. I mean, a lot of people have gotten fired because their views have been other than what the company has. I mean, Mike Malloy is a perfect example. He used to be pretty big here in Atlanta, and they just
I don't know who that is, but I can tell you more of the firings right now are because of obscenity. Yeah, you know, people are all upset ever since Janet, you know, had show and tell, you know, put her deal out there on national TV. That was a And then pretended she didn't know anything about it. So, yeah, it's funny. The market is doing this kind of self-cleansing now. There's this self-cleansing. And I'm sure things will get dirty again. You know, about the time the ratings slack off, management will start to look the other way and allow things to get a little perverted again.
Well, it's funny. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Howard Stern, but Clear Channel let him go from their stations. But his ratings are actually
right.
Up now. So that's weird. I mean, he wasn't
Howard's
on.
Going to make money no matter what. Howard would make money if he was, you know, working on a little AM somewhere in Scottsdale.
Right.
Howard's going to make money.
Now, it might surprise people to know that apart from doing the voice stuff, you are also an artist. And
my secret life.
Your secret life.
My secret life.
How many years have you been doing this?
I've always drawn. Ever since I was a kid, I've always drawn. I enjoy it. My work now is pretty much landscape. Type work. They're like aerial maps. I've told people before it's like going up 2,000 feet in a plane and hitting yourself in the head with a shoe.
Okay.
Kind of an unusual look at things that way. Yeah, we're in the permanent collection of the High Museum in Atlanta, and in fact, as we speak, the show, they have a drawing show at the High Museum on the third floor, and I'm in there with some other wonderful living artists, as well as people who, you know, I consider to be the greats, wonderful self-taught artists like, you know, Howard Finster and Nellie Mae Rowe, J.B. Murray, Ted Gordon. My buddy Ben Jones is in the show. Ben is, thankfully, he's one of the living guys. But, you know, it's a humbling experience. There was a reception last Wednesday for the artists. Who were still around, and it was an honor to be able to go in there, and you know, you're in the shadows, of the greats, people who did it because they had to do it, because of the love of the art and creating the art, not because they thought they could make a buck.
Right.
You know, I'm largely self-taught. I have always drawn, I've always painted, I've always built sculptures. But, you know, I had a couple of classes along the way. It wasn't, I don't think it was anything that influenced me one way or the other, but my college years, worst student again. While I was in Tampa at USF, I managed to take a print class at Graphic Studio, which is a huge, huge graphics, you know, major print studio. They have their entire collections in the National, I think it's the National Gallery, owns one piece, one of everything they've done, I believe, is in the National Gallery. Just an amazing school. Major league pop artists have done additions there. And, of course, students, you know, get to follow these guys around and watch them work, and it's amazing.
Well, I know you go to conventions from time to time, and in fact, you and I will be at a convention in late May. We're going to J-Con,
which is down
in Orlando. And
in Orlando.
You always do a little artwork for, you know, for autographs and stuff like that. And
Motor City in Detroit before that. So, yeah, I'm running like a madman in May.
Is that a car convention?
No, that's Motor City Comics. Up in Detroit, the Motor City Comic Con, I think they call it, which is the 14th, 15th, and 16th, I think. And then I come see you, the 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, I think?
Yeah,
for
May.
For J-Con, my old pal Ken Nabby in Orlando. It's a great show. Which is funny, because it's anime. And, you know, I mean, Space Ghost isn't really anime, but...
Well, it's popular with the younger crowd.
Exactly. It's popular with the anime set, and they're a great bunch, and they're tremendous hosts. I have a grand time there every time. This will be my third year with them.
Well, tell me some of the characters that you sketch out on the when you do the autographs.
I don't do it all every time. I mean, if I don't have a line, then, you know, I can spend a little more time. I always spend time with everybody. You know, it's funny, I did MegaCon in Orlando back in, I think it was February, and a couple of people always come up and tell you, it's like, you're really cool. You actually talk to people. You know, and I mean, that's just me. I'm like, well, wait a minute. You mean other people don't talk? It's like other celebrities just... It's kind of, I guess the others just kind of keep you moving. I don't know, and I enjoy meeting the fans.
Well, you really haven't been doing the convention thing for that long. There's a lot of people who, that's basically how they make a living.
Right.
And so they're, you know, it's all business to them, and, you know, the fans are just kind of like there, and they might be polite to a certain extent, but it's kind of like, yes, thank you, you know, move on next. You know, we got to have turnover, you know, that sort of thing. I'm sure a lot of people ask you for advice on how to get into voice acting. What is your usual answer for that is
excel in your studies, take pre-med, graduate with honors, specialize, become a brain surgeon, do something other than broadcasting. Because, you know, 30 years in, man, and I still feel like, you know, I'm starting over every week.
Right. Well, it's difficult, you know, because you have to always keep your name out there.
Even with a resume.
Yeah,
it's
and
tough.
even with a show, and you know, while granted, Space Coast is not like as popular as, say, Friends or Seinfeld or anything like that. There's
yeah,
a lot of people. There are a lot of people who
retire.
Yeah. Well, you know, but every time that we go somewhere, I mean, whenever you say something, you say, "Hey, I know your voice." You know, there's always somebody recognizing you, you know, from your voice.
Which is fun.
Yeah.
Which is fun. You know, I was up visiting friends of all places in Mentone, Alabama last weekend, and went to visit this couple that I know, the Gallimores, and they have a really nice daughter, and you know, great family. And this lady, Emma, the mom, says, "Oh, by the way, Laura found something." I'm like, "What'd she find?" And she was apparently going through a Sunday supplement and found my face on a box for a Time Warner selling blooper videos. And I'm like, "You're kidding me." And she handed me the thing, and sure enough, there it was, this thing from the Sunday paper, you know, TV Guide, or not TV Guide, I guess it was Time Life. Time Life wacky bloopers, awkward broadcast moments or something. And I remember I did the show, and then they didn't use it, but I guess they felt badly because they didn't use it or whatever, and said, "Well, at least put him on the box." So... I don't know. This is like a decade ago, and apparently I'm still selling the damn blooper video. So, yeah, I think I only got paid once for that, so congratulations, Time Life.
You got a surprise call, was it, about a couple of weeks ago from the Janine Garofalo show?
Yeah, that was a blast. That was a blast. I know nothing. Like I say, you know, I'm not Mr. Political Expert here. You know, it's not like James Carville. When you ask me, I just tell you what I think, you know. And my general opinion is they're all weasels.
Right.
You know, I mean, who else wants to go into that, you know, for any particularly noble reason? They generally, you know, even though they pretend to have noble reasons, most of them have their own little itinerary. You
right.
Know? But yeah, you know, I had a ball with a great time with Janine. And
but she asked you about Condoleezza Rice, and what did you respond?
Well, my response was, "Have you ever had it with andouille sausage?" And the whole show digressed into this story about how she actually found a styrofoam packing peanut and some sausage that she bought.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, like, what do you put on the label now with 40% less styrofoam packing peanuts? you know, I don't know how a packing peanut falls in styrofoam, but it was great because there we went off the page, and that's when I think interviews become fun, when you're not just sitting there, you know, generally running down your list. You let things go in the direction they're going. And in her case, it was a blast because she started telling me about the stupid packing peanut. And then Sam, for whatever reason, her co-host, got into the whole topic of vivisection, which was just creepy. And I didn't know what else to say at the break. They asked if I could stay, and I said, yeah, we'll be back with more andouille sausage and vivisection after this. So, yeah, I managed to refer to both of our exciting topics.
Are you a fan of her from any of her movies and other stuff?
I thought she was really yummy in Romy and Twinkie's Summer Vacation, or whatever it was, with Mira Sorvino and... who was the tall one, the Amazon pleasure goddess, what's her face, from Friends, Lisa Kudrow.
I
thought she was real cute in that. She had her little black dress on at the prom and was looking real yummy, and I told her that. It became awkward because I was, like, hitting on her in the interview. Yeah, so I haven't been back since either. They did call, though. They asked if I would be on every month. I said, yeah, and then I haven't been called since. So
they get a little crazy. Jeanette actually went out. Have you seen her in Mystery Men?
No.
Oh, that's a good movie.
Her in Copland.
Yeah.
And she weaseled out at the last moment. You know, all hell was breaking loose in Copland. You know, Sylvester Stallone was about to go get his ear shot off, and she took off. She said, no, that's it. I want to be a police person, but not anymore. So she took off.
Well, I know you are a big fan of The Simpsons. You have one of the world's largest Simpsons collectibles.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Well, you've got a lot of them.
I've got the action figures.
Is what you've got. Now, you know, The Simpsons people are on strike now.
Yeah.
The main voice actors.
Right.
And I just wanted to get your feelings about that. These guys are asking for some money.
I feel their pain. I do, because, you know, I can relate to somebody, you know, making a bunch of money off you and then saying they're not making a bunch of money.
Well, let's put this in perspective here. These guys were getting,
okay, playing dumb for $1,000, please, Alex.
Well, you know, I have tremendous respect. I mean, you know, I listen to what you do, but I listen to, like, Dan Castellaneta, who does so many of the voices there.
Yep.
And it's like, my God, the man is amazing. Now, currently...
So is Hank and, you know, Harry, they do a ton of stuff, too.
Now, currently, they're making $125,000 per episode.
It's 100 and a quarter or 100?
Well, according to what I have here from The Guardian newspaper in England, that's what they're making. About $125,000 per episode. But they're asking for $360,000. Now, that seems like a lot to guys like you and me, but let's put this in perspective. The Simpsons show has probably generated about $1 billion.
No, it's my argument exactly. You're not going to hear me arguing. In fact, I think 360 is low. I think they ought to do like the Friends. If Simpsons are closing in on the last season, I think they should be paying them, you know, $1 million a show.
Well, they've been going. This is their 15th year now.
I think 360 is settling. So, you know, in my view, Fox should bite the bullet and cheerfully pay it, because 360 is a bargain.
Well,
look at the track record the show's had.
That's their flagship show, man. That's the show that put them on the map.
No, there's no question. Fox would be a parking lot if it hadn't been The Simpsons.
Right.
And America's Most Wanted and Cops. Those three shows built the network.
Well, what's happening for the future here? They're still doing Space Ghost Coast to Coast. They're not doing as many shows as they used to.
I'm not qualified to answer what's happening for the future. I don't know. Hopefully more voiceovers. Voiceover's good.
Well, they're still doing Space Ghost shows.
Hire George Lowe through the William Morris Agency in New York.
Well, they're still doing Space Ghost, though, aren't they? I mean,
they haven't canceled it. Done one this year.
They're not doing as many as they used to.
Right. But we did six last year, and we were going to do more this year. I don't know if that's still happening or not.
So what about the Brack Show?
Brack Show, I think, is gone.
Oh, really?
Yep.
That's sad, because that was a funny show.
I thought so.
You have a great voice for that. You did that kind of Fernando Lamas.
Father, you know, Joseph, your program is very wild, popular with people.
Well, it's hard to do when we're dancing all the time here.
See, it's true.
I do the show dancing. It just makes it more interesting.
Don't try to dip me. Very uncomfortable.
Well, George, I want to thank you for being on the show and taking your time to to talk to me and sit down.
My pleasure, Cup O'Joe.
I might bring my mic down with me to J-Con, and maybe we can just record a little thing there while we're talking to the people in J-Con. That ought to be interesting.
Oh, heavens. Don't hold me to anything at a convention.
Well, we'll see what happens when
but
we
I'm
get
I'm looking
down.
Forward to seeing you and my fans in Orlando and Detroit and elsewhere. Going to be in Jacksonville in June. Looking forward to seeing everybody out there. The fans are the ones keeping me from living under the overpass.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Cooking with Brack. You know, everybody at one time or another has enjoyed that wonderful Oriental delight, the poo-poo platter. Well, today I'm going to go one step better and prepare Brack's special poo-poo-poo platter. You know, it has an extra poo there. It's the extra poo that makes all the difference. I could have taken the easy road and did a poo platter, but who wants a platter with just one poo? I found that even the conventional two poo platter leaves one a little bit, how should I say it, unfulfilled. I trust you'll find that's not the case when you experience the thrill of an extra poo.
Brack,
what?
There's no time left for your poo-poo platter.
You mean my poo-poo-poo platter.
Whatever. Put your poo in the refrigerator and we'll try to work it into another show.
Somebody's gonna steal my poo, I just know it. What if I make a sign that says, this is Brack poo, don't touch it.
That should do it.
Yeah.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, that URL is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and you can email me. Please email me, joevec@bellsouth.net. I want to thank George Lowe for taking time out of his busy schedule to sit down and talk with me, and maybe I can entice him to come on a time or two in the future, but we will see. We will see. I hope everybody's doing pretty good today. It is 12:54 p.m. on Wednesday, April the 28th. Is it the 28th? Yes, it is the 28th. Wow, the month's already almost gone already. If you listen to my show on a regular basis, if you've listened, you know that I'm not a very religious person. I had a big rant about that a couple of shows ago. Was it last show? I never keep track of that stuff. But I'm not really a particularly religious person. But there is one website that I do read regularly. That's a Christian website. It's called The Village Gate. It was formerly known as The Right Christians. And that's still the website URL is therightchristians.org. And basically the title of it came from a comment by Al Sharpton. Excuse me, Joe and his continuing battles with phlegm, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry about that. This is professional show business, ladies and gentlemen. This is what happens when you're not a professional radio guy, and just these things happen. Anyway, the name of the website came from a comment by Reverend Al Sharpton, who said it's time for the Christian right to meet the right Christians, because in my opinion, the people like Mr. Bush and Mr. Cheney and all these people who are very, you know, conservative fundamentalists, to me, they are not really religious people. They just use religion as a means to manipulate people, empower themselves, and enrich themselves. But at any rate, the reason why I became aware of this website is because the Reverend Alan Brill, who is the host of this thing, and now they have several, it's like a multi-blog, which is good, did some very, very good commentaries on working conditions back at a century ago and how we're working towards that again today, slowly but surely. You can already see that with the loss of overtime and things like that. And one of his posters, a lady by the name of Melanie, who is a very vicious fighter. I've seen some of her other posts. When she gets on the attack, she gets on the attack. And she wrote an essay during the California grocery strike last year. And it was based on a comment that she had read on what was known as Cal Pundit, which is one of the larger blogs, and he's gone on to become a professional writer. But and she asked, do you know how the slightest little provocation can set off a long string of reflections? And in my case, adjectives, because it happens to me sometimes. I'm sure it happens to you. She was upset because somebody in the comment section when Cal Pundit had posted something about the grocery strikes, one of the commenters was just offended by the whole strike. And they took the position that these are not skilled jobs, and that if people were simply willing to improve themselves and work harder, get an education, and dig a little deeper, they wouldn't be working in a grocery store. Therefore, there's no reason that grocery workers with decades on the job should be making $17 an hour. If they had any gumption, they'd go out and do what it takes to, you know, get a good job. Now, both she and I were offended by that comment. I just read it now, recently, and I'm offended by it because it's an offensive remark. You know, you hear that all the time for, I'm a fan of the show MASH, and there was a sequence where Frank Burns was looking for a medal that he had gotten. Actually, it was a Purple Heart that he kind of fudged the truth in order to get. And they had a whole bunch of little Korean children there. And he was, pissed off because, you know, he thought one of the Korean kids had stolen his medal. And Radar O'Reilly, who's standing there holding a wounded kid, he said, sir, they steal because they're poor. And And Frank Burns is like, there's no excuse for being poor. If they had any gumption, they go out and get a job. And it's just that kind of attitude. I mean, he's talking, in this case, Burns was talking about Korea, for Christ's sake, which was in the middle of a war. People having their entire villages blown to bits. You know, jobs, you know, come on, get real. You know, the struggle to survive every day for some of these people. And this is the same attitude that this guy has when he talks, oh, you got no right making $17 an hour. You're just a grocery worker. You know, Melanie goes on to call it a pernicious Calvinism, and Calvin was a philosopher who believed very strongly in that kind of mantra of, you know, if you think it, you can do it. You know, which works for some people, I guess, but it doesn't work for other people. It has never worked for me, at least certainly as far as not earning a lot of money is concerned. She calls it bad theology, which has infected the secular popular culture, and it damns the ordinary working man. The commenter was probably an upper-middle-class white guy who has no clue about how hard it is to make a living in this country if you don't come out of that upper-middle-class white culture to start with. This I agree with wholeheartedly. I call it the white welfare system, where if you're a certain kind of person, you basically get much more of a free ride in this country than you would anywhere else. You get the high-paying job, so you don't have to worry about, you know, whether you're going to go on welfare, stuff like that. You know, the myth, according to Melanie, comes out of the theology of our Puritan past, the theology which said that God's chosen will be known by their worldly success. Anyone who is less than successful is damned in God's eyes. This is one of the factors which has made us so fascinated by wealth and celebrity, and one of the reasons that many Americans think that wealth and celebrity could be theirs with a little good luck or a break. It's hogwash, of course, but an astounding number of us buy it. And that is the absolute truth. There's a lot of people out there who think, well, because you have money that you've earned it. And you're incapable of, you know, if you just want to be a low-skill worker, and some people just want to be low-skill workers, and they really don't care to do anything more than just, you know, go out there and do their job and work hard, and some people are content with that. I'm not necessarily content with that, and my problem is that I really don't know what it takes, and I'm not part of that white welfare crowd, because I really don't fit in with those people any more than I fit in with the really, really, you know, the drug users and all that stuff. And, you know, I suffer for it because I don't fit in. I mean, it's not that I'm not a hard worker. I am a hard worker, but I have less tolerance for bullshit than most people do. Some people are just capable of putting up with the bullshit. I'm not. I've got to open my mouth, which is why I put together a radio show to talk about stuff, because I got to open my mouth. I'm an opinionated son of a bitch. And people know that I'm an opinionated son of a bitch, and it makes it uncomfortable to work with. Especially it makes bosses uncomfortable because, you know, I talk about stuff that they don't want to talk about. Where I work, we have a situation where, you know, I've been there for 6 months, and I can run the area better than my supervisor can. But you can't let the supervisor know that. Or you can't, you know, set yourself up as that you're a threat to them. And I'm really not. I really don't want to be the supervisor. I just want to have a nice, comfortable, easy workplace so that I can go to work every day and do my job and then come home and do the radio show, which is what I really would prefer to do. You know, do the radio show, write the blog. If I had my druthers, if I had, you know, whatever kind of money coming in, this is what I'd rather do. And I'm working towards that. That's why I do the radio show. That's why I get on Rant Radio. That's why I get on Radio Power and White Rose Society, so that more people can hear me, so that somebody may say, hey, this guy's pretty good. Now, I realize I'm not the smoothest guy in the world as far as radio voices are concerned. Now, people have told me I have a good voice, but I listen to, you know, the DJs, and I listen to guys like George who are really professionals at it, and I know I'm not in their class, and frankly, I'm not trying to be in their class. I simply can't do it. Fran Drescher, who plays the nanny, and you all know who I'm talking about, and you listen to that voice and you think, my God, but the truth of the matter is that voice was what made her unique and gave her that edge. And people were telling her at the beginning that she shouldn't, you know, that she should change her voice and stuff like that. And she tried, and she wasn't getting very much success out of it. But then she just decided to use it and go with it and be herself, and she became very successful because of that. And, you know, she had to suffer a lot before she got successful. But it wasn't so much that she was successful monetarily. is that she was successful because she was doing what she wanted to do. That is a greater measure of success, in my opinion. If you're happy with what you're doing, if you enjoy your work, if you enjoy your business, if you run a business, then you are a success. If you can make money at it, just enough to survive. Let me tell you something. The kind of money that the Bushes have and the Cheneys have and all those people, you become a slave to that money. Because there's always somebody else who wants it, and you have to constantly watch who you're going to get. A lot of the things that the Bush people do, and people who seek power throughout history, they do the things that they do because they're afraid that if they don't do it for themselves, somebody's going to do it to them. And that's a lot of the psychology behind it, that they're afraid that someone's going to do it to them, that if they don't keep pushing and getting more power, eventually someone's going to knock them out of power. And you know what? Someone is eventually going to knock them out of power. They cannot continue to win the way they're doing now. Melanie goes on to say, there's a deeper issue than all this. Why shouldn't every job pay a living wage? In biblical language, isn't every workman worthy of their hire? I don't want to get into free trade policy, she said, with, you know, job offshoring and macroeconomics, but just look at the one grocery strike and the assumptions that are made about the people who do low-skill work like this. I would argue that if the commenter on the blog were placed cold in front of one of those computerized grocery terminals with minimal training, his first day in the job would pretty much suck. Let's not get into meat cutting. Stocking shelves properly takes a little training and some experience, and each of these have economic costs. Experience has economic value. And I will say this, actually, I did work for a time in a grocery store at a deli, part-time job when I was working a full-time job elsewhere. It was my second job. And they were impressed by the fact that it was the first day on the job and I was actually cutting meat for the customers. And it just that's really just the kind of guy I am. I'm very much a, you know, let me do what I need to do. I am a very much a take-action kind of guy and to take the type to take initiative, but I have my limits to that. And that's what kills me at work, because I'll start out a certain way, and then I'll realize what needs to be done and what doesn't need to be done, and I'll stick with that. I don't feel like, you know, killing myself, because I know really that there's not much chance of me advancing, because I just don't fit in with the management crowd, because my ideas of management and supervising are very different from theirs. At the company where I work, this management and the supervisors, their attitude is push people as hard as they can, you know, that old productivity thing. Which, again, is a bullshit statistic, which basically means we'll force you to work as hard as you can for as little money as we can possibly pay you. And I'm just not going to buy into that. They're going to have to pay me a hell of a lot more money than what I'm currently making. And I make roughly about $11.50, $11.60 an hour. It's like $11.10, but I get like 20 cents more, and I guess got like a 20-cent raise a little while ago. Hopefully, if the union negotiations work out okay, I should be getting a $2 an hour raise, or at least $1.75, which would be very nice. That's an extra, you know, $40 to $80 a week, and that can be very, very useful. And it's really not a lot of money, though. I mean, realistically speaking, if I wanted to be, you know, seriously self-supportive, I should be making about $17-$18 an hour. Not, you know, and it sounds like a lot of money, but it's really not. And especially if you're in California, which is where this grocery strike took place, the cost of living there is much higher. The only reason I'm surviving at all is because I have a very inexpensive room here. You know, and my wife and I live in very cramped quarters. We have basically one bedroom, a bathroom, a hallway, and a kitchen, and that's it. And there's a big kind of like public utility room, like a living room type area that basically we're just using for storage right now. You know, we've made it as neat as we possibly can, but it's really not a space that we live in regularly. So, you know, that's the only reason that we're surviving, and also the fact that our landlord was gracious enough to let me stay here while I was unemployed, you know, and just allow me to get caught up on rent, which we're just about at the point on. And if the contract negotiations don't go well, I could find myself in a situation where I'm on strike too. So the grocery worker strike, you know, plays into the heart of that for me. Because if they do it as badly as the unions at the grocery workers, the unions for them played it, we could wind up, you know, either just getting the union disbanded or getting a lot less money. Because I'll tell you, if we didn't have the union there, and it's an IBEW, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. If we didn't have the union there, I wouldn't be making, you know, 11-something an hour. I'd be making maybe $7 or $8 an hour. And you know what? I would have quit a long time ago. I would not have put up with that. The type of stuff that I have to put up at work is, quite frankly, not enough. You know, and $7 an hour is worthless. You know, in this day and age, I mean, you know, all this talk about inflation and stuff like that. Let me tell you, it's the prices that keep getting inflated. In the mid-1960s, my dad was making $6.50 an hour in New York City. On that one salary alone, we supported a family of five. We didn't live luxuriously. You know, it was a stretch to go out and get, you know, eat out, which, you know, we really didn't have to do anyway. But we survived, and we did pretty good. There was always food on the table. There was always clothes on our backs. You know, and my father managed to save enough money so that they could buy a house in Florida, and we moved down to Florida. Now, can you imagine anybody making $6.50 an hour now being able to do that? It's just simply not possible. Not unless you're living at home and not paying any rent. The only way you're going to be able to do that is if you have no expenses. So, you know, it's all, you know, Melanie is looking at it from a biblical point of view, which is how Alan looks at it. And it's really just a moral thing to me. People deserve what they get. You know, it's like we were talking about the Simpsons things. Yeah, $360,000 per episode seems like a lot to us. But when you consider the value that these people have to the show that they do and to the company, to Fox, you know, it's nothing. Even George was like, and you heard George's, some of George's political stuff. He's you know, I wouldn't call him a right winger, but, you know, he's one of those guys that's just on one particular side of an issue because he really doesn't pay that much attention. So he just sees things from a straightforward kind of way. So, you know, but even he was like, man, those guys, even at $360,000 an episode, which is what they're asking for, they are underpaid. And that's just ridiculous. You know, that people get treated like that. And I guarantee you, even though those people are making a lot of money, they are still workers. Just like the baseball players, just like the football players. You can sit there and remark about how much money they make, but the fact of the matter is that they're still workers. And people can afford to pay those salaries. You know, and that's why I go on about Walmart, because Walmart doesn't pay their employees anywhere near what they deserve, and they have a very anti-union and anti-worker attitude, and that warmatization, as the rightchristians.org calls it, is spreading across the country. It's a drive down towards the bottom. You know, this country built itself up because they were trying to raise the standards of working people in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s especially. Better money, you know, lower cost of living, and the government took a much stronger interest in what was going on. I mean, there was rent control. There was wage control. You know, they had a little bit more control of what was happening. And for the most part, people were prosperous. I'm not saying it was a perfect time, because there was still a lot of racism, and there was still a lot of bigotry, and there were still things that needed to be taken care of. But for the most part, people were prosperous. And they worked hard, and they got the money that they deserved. And that's all what people are asking. $17 an hour seems like a lot of money if you're making $5 or $6 an hour. But frankly, if you're making $5 or $6 an hour, you're working at a McDonald's or working at a Burger King or a Taco Bell or someplace like that, you deserve a lot more money. You should be the ones making $12 an hour or so, you know, $12 to $15 an hour. Really, a living wage in this country, depending on where you live, is probably between $15 and $20 an hour. That's a living wage. And a living wage is defined as making as much in 1 week as you pay for a month in rent. You know, so you can actually make some money and be able to save some money. And not just, you know, go paycheck to paycheck like most people do, like I do. I see by the clock in the wall that I have to put an end to this, because now I'm trying to work my time a little more. Because I'm on Rant Radio and I'm on Radio Power. I'm just trying to organize my time a little better. And it's all new to me. And my usual bitch is that I do it all by myself, and I do the best that I can. But I want to make sure I try to get everything into a one-hour time slot, at least for the Rant Radio and the Radio Power people. So I am going to sign off here. We will be back again on Sunday. You can listen. In Radio Power, they just kind of have the show on whenever. Rant Radio, you can listen to the show at 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Thursday, and at 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on... No, excuse me, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Thursday, and 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Sunday. This is Joe Vecchio from the Cup of Joe Radio Show signing off. Bye-bye. Thank you.